My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
Let's talk. John
Brown. Motorcycle Grand Prix. Insider stories from World Championship Racing is, well, if you don't know about MotoGP and you're living in Spain, which rock have you been hiding under? It is massive in this country. We have four Grand Prix in Spain. I think it's four. Catalonia, Jerez, Aragon, and another, which is completely... Valencia, which is completely escaped my notice. But the man who can tell us all about this is my next guest, who is renowned guru. Can we say guru of MotoGP? Ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys, I'm delighted to say that Adam Wheeler joins me live on the line now. Adam, good morning to you.
Good morning, Giles. Definitely not a guru. I don't know, pretty well ensconced in the scene, I guess you could say. But gurus have probably been a little bit generous.
Well, you know, it's almost the weekend. So what is your role? I mean, you report on it for international press. I mean, how did you get into following this?
Oh, goodness. Well, the rapid version. My dad was, you know, incredibly into sort of motorcycle racing. We lived half an hour from Brands Hatch Circuit in the UK. And I moved to Spain about 25 years ago, actually, to work in the MotoGP series as one of the first English reporters for Dorna Sports, who are the company that hold the rights to the series. And just sort of been here ever since. And while I'm talking to you now, I'm actually sat in the car parked outside Motorland Aragon, because that's the scene of the Grand Prix this weekend. So it's already nice and toasty. And it's probably going to be another good one.
Yeah, because I mean, we're based in the Costa del Sol. So an hour and a half, we're in Jerez. And as you know, Jerez has got a very special place in Spanish motor racing circles. Of course, the home of the GP for ages, for donkey's years now. Why do you think Spain gets MotoGP in such a, I mean, you can only the Italians are even close to the way that Spain takes its MotoGP.
I mean, it just all boils down to the sunshine, doesn't it? I mean, I think that's why, you know, you have such a large volume of motorcyclists. I live in the center of Barcelona and the things are everywhere. And I think that's just the basic first ingredient for people being on two wheels. I mean, of course, post Second World War, it was obviously the most affordable means of transportation for a great many people as sort of societies and industries began to rebuild. But, you know, I can remember as a kid coming on holiday to Spain and, you know, seeing riders or cutouts or POS, if you like, in gas stations of MotoGP riders and thinking it was incredible. You know, as a kid who sort of grew up close to Brands Hatch and motorcycle racing, not really being on the landscape in the UK, to see that sort of prominent advertising for the sport was unreal. You know, I can remember buying a beach towel like in a market in Cartagena down south with Emilio Alfamora, who is hardly a standout icon of motorcycle racing, and feeling, you know, like I was going to the beach with the coolest piece of, you know, attire you could have. So, yeah, just the prominence of motorcycle racing, and I explain to people, like, especially in the UK, the fact that it appears on the evening news, is a major asset, I think, the way that the Spanish developed their motorcycle racing styles as well explains why they've just dominated the sport for the last sort of 15 to 20 years.
You see, it's really interesting because, I'm a little bit older than you, you see. So I grew up, I was like a 10-year-old in 1978. And at that point, we had Mick Grant, Barry Sheen, Ron Haslam, Rocket Ron. And we used to have the Trans-American Series. So Kenny Roberts and Randy Mamet would come over, and they had these great races at Alton Park, Mallory Park, Brands, etc. And at that point, it was 500cc racing, Phil Reed, etc. And we had this, and it was very much front and centre in the UK. But as time developed, I suppose the racing became, it changed, the character of the racing changed. Barry Sheen was perhaps the last sort of, the substantial last British race that people would know. And since then, it's gravitated to, Italy always had Agostini. But otherwise, Britain sort of fell out of love with MotoGP pretty much, even though it still has a Grand Prix, and Spain and Italy became sort of front and centre.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I guess it's entwined slightly with the trends of transportation. Motorcycles became more expensive. British roads became busier. Yeah. There's all sorts of sociocultural threads, linked with that. But I think as a sport, motorcycle racing has only got more spectacular as the speeds and the physics have increased. That's sort of one of the reasons why I wanted to impart some of that in the book, which sort of came out earlier this year, a couple of months ago. But I remember growing up as a kid, my dad used to have like a season ticket for Brands. So we would be down there for a club race one weekend, and then the following weekend, it'd be some sort of power bike. Then it would be an international. I mean, he took me to those transatlantic races as well. I mean, Barry Sheen did a pretty good job of crossing over into the mainstream when there was hardly any sort of mainstream media outlets compared to now. And then, the UK has just been starved really of those high profile athletes since Cal Crutchlow, retired in 2020. Yeah. He was, of course, the last rider to win a Grand Prix in the Premier class since Sheen. That had been like a sort of a 40-year dry spell. And we're missing another Crutchlow, really.
But it's interesting to say that the social thing, because, of course, since then, the UK has become a nation of, and I use this word advisedly, cyclists. Everybody would have bought a motorbike. Now, it's obviously for very good reasons to Chris Hoy, and et cetera, et cetera. And so as the UK becomes more in love with two wheels that under your own power, perhaps it's a little bit of fun out, a little bit of love with motorcycling.
Yeah, I think it's just maybe the state of the roads as well. I mean, I was working last weekend in Germany for the motocross Grand Prix, and just driving through Germany, I just thought, this is an amazing sort of landscape to drive on. Whereas, the previous weekend I'd been in Silverstone for the British Grand Prix, and you just couldn't drive for more than a couple of hundred meters without hitting a pothole. And I thought, well, if I'm sort of riding a 15,000 pound adventure bike or a sports bike, the amount of traffic on the road, the state of the roads, everything else seems to sort of conspire against making motorcycling what it used to be decades ago. And I think that also just feeds into the sporting aspect. And then, of course, you have the associated costs of racing these days. And it's just a shame that bikes only really pop up in mainstream consciousness when, there's some sort of fatality, which we unfortunately had recently in British Superbike, and it sort of fed straight into the Isle of Man TT, which is closing off this weekend. But MotoGP, it's pretty much like a month away from being acquired by Liberty Media. The UK, of course, is a stronghold for Formula One. And, Liberty Media holds sort of control, or they hold the reins of Formula One. If any of the sort of promotion, no one feeds into motorcycles, then we could see a lot more motorcycle racing pop up or feed a little bit more into, people's appreciation of general wider sport. So that's the hope anyway.
Yeah, but the thing is, okay, there was a very good quote the other day saying that if you following Formula One and Drive to Survive, people got into Formula One on Drive to Survive, but they need drama. So they want to see Verstappen and Russell duking it out in the car park afterwards. If you have been to a MotoGP race, as I have at Jerez, you don't need drama because there is enough going on in terms of overtaking in sheer And Scheer, my goodness, how on earth did he make it? I mean, watching Rossi at his peak going around a corner, or even Crivier or Carlos Checa, and you'd go, how on earth did they get around there without taking out, you know, everybody else, you know, half the spectators? Because it is, the drama is inherently there.
Yeah, I think if you want to compare or contrast Formula One to MotoGP, then F1 doesn't really have the spectacle, but it has the characters, which has been, you know, brought more to the forefront by things like Drive to Survive, which is a great series, by the way. My kids, who are 16 and 18, love it. But then MotoGP has the action. So for 40 to 45 minutes, you're going to be entertained on a Sunday afternoon, but you don't necessarily know who the people are behind the visors. And this is where, you know, I think Liberty, when they come in, they'll help in that aspect. They'll create, you know, these personalities, these characters, and you'll actually care more about what the likes of Pecco Bagnaia or Fabio Quartararo are doing, and Marc Marquez, and how he could, you know, his story this year of winning a world championship again, if it happens, since, you know, 2019, you know, is a great sort of comeback narrative. So that's the difference between the two and the four wheels.
Yeah, but I suppose that they've missed the thing, because, again, I'm going back sort of maybe 10, 20 years. Rossi, I mean, the Doctor, I mean, a character and a half. His ongoing battles with Seti Hibernau, of course, who Max Biaggi, famously, and then you've got supporting crew, you know, crew like, I don't know, like I said, Carlos Checa from before. You've got Loris Capirossi, Jorge Lorenzo with Lorenzo. I mean, they were all kind of there, but now we've sort of skipped a it's moved on, and perhaps the younger drivers don't have quite, I mean, Marquez notwithstanding, have quite that charisma or quite that personality outside of the sport.
Yeah, I mean, don't forget his clash with Marc Marquez. You know, Rossi versus Marquez in sort of 2015 in Sepang. That was for me the kind of nadir of MotoGP at its most sort of hooligan element, because you had these rival camps. I mean, for years afterwards, Marquez was booed at every Italian round. You know, he sort of was the one perceived to have denied Valentino Rossi his last chance at a world championship. And Rossi is much loved in motorsport, you know, for his theatricality. I mean, he's an incredibly intelligent and ruthless motorcycle racer, sort of carved his own niche and sort of transcended the sport, really. You know, one of the very few. You know, he was a shortcut if you said Valentino Rossi, then people sort of generally knew what you were talking about. But, you know, Marquez, for me, is still the greatest I've seen, just the way that he sort of moved the parameters of the sport. But, yeah, I mean, 2015, you know, it hyped the sport up, but it was kind of ugly at the same time. But maybe some sort of element of that is needed again. Like you say, there is a lot of from kind of respect and friendship around amongst the riders at the moment. And I don't know, maybe it has to be a little bit more sensational in some way, even though I sort of despise contrived circumstances.
And at the same time, I mean, we are talking about a sport, you know, which it says on the back of every pass you go to, whatever, you're probably the one you're holding at the moment, which just says motor racing is dangerous. I mean, you stick your leg out like Biaggi did against Rossi back in the day, and something really serious can happen. And you know, people get it, not even riders, but marshals, spectators. It only takes a millisecond of madness and something goes flying in the wrong place, and we have a tragedy on our hands. So, you know, I get that we need the drama, but like I said before, if you start egging it on, it's not like a football match.
Yeah.
You know, so just tell me a little bit about sport, because is this the 75th anniversary of the championship per se?
It was last year.
Last year,
and they actually, it's this year ahead of F1, so it's a year older. I mean, F1's doing the whole F1 75 this year, and, you know, that movie is already everywhere, isn't it? I mean, it's coming out in a couple of weeks. It just seems to be all over my social media channels anyway.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be massive. I think people were going to sort of, you see Barbie and Oppenheimer dressing up, well, not Oppenheimer, but more Barbie. And I think it'll be the same thing for this film. I think you'll see people in team apparel and liveries going to the cinema. And, you know, I think it's another indication of how much F1 has just suddenly swollen into this massive sort of behemoth of motorsport. But MotoGP, it's always been a little bit in the wake of F1. And I just hope, you know, in the next sort of month or so, it can pop up and, you know, find its own sort of position and get bigger, because the action and the intensity deserves more of a fan base.
But perhaps the thing that makes it appealing is the fact that, you know, it's not, you can sort of relatively wander around You know, you get closer to the action with MotoGP, perhaps, or am I way out off the mark here? Because, you know, I mean, with F1, unless you've got you know the VIP paddock pass or whatever, you are quite a long way away from the action. You know, and it is very, very, you know, you see your drivers, you know, on the parade lap, and that's kind of it. I'm not saying that you can walk into the motorhomes in MotoGP these days, but you can get a little bit closer, I've always thought.
Yeah, I would wager MotoGP is a little bit more accessible. I mean, it's still quite exclusive in the paddock. I mean, you need a special pass to get in there. But I think, you know, it's just more relative. I think you can appreciate more what the individual, the human element of it, because you can see these guys scraping various parts of their anatomy on the road at 150 mile an hour. You know, whereas F1, of course, you know, with the safety developments and advancements, you know, with the halos and everything else, you don't really get that kind of connection, which is where Drive to Survive was so good for the sport, because it really just, you know, peeled back the protective layers of the car and said, well, here's what Max Verstappen's like and here's what he thinks. You know, whereas in MotoGP, I think you can look at the motorcyclist right away and think, well, you know, I have to respect what this guy is doing or how he's committing or the risks that he's taking.
And also, if you're a sports biker, if you've gone to Jerez, you've gone to Barcelona or Valencia on your sports bike, you know, you can kind of see a similarity, vague that maybe, with what you're riding, what you're going to be riding home with. Whereas you really can't do that with a modern F1 car.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of heard the opposite. I mean, I've heard people say that MotoGP, you know, is unrelatable because people don't know what it's like to ride a motorcycle, whereas everybody knows how to drive a car. Therefore, you can appreciate, you know, maybe a 0.1 of what Lewis Hamilton's doing on a Sunday. I mean, yeah, it depends on how you look at it. I think just from a visual point of view, you're going to be more impressed with MotoGP and being trackside. You know, the physics of it, the volume of it. You know, that's something I tried to convey a little bit in the book, you know, for people that haven't got close to the action. It is quite a visceral sport.
So, I mean, with the book itself, are you taking people or leading them gently by the hand through what goes on in a Grand Prix weekend? Some of the, like, circuits like Aston, which a lot of people won't have heard of, but is as famous as Spa is in F1, for example. It's part of the history in a way that some circuits aren't. And also, you know, the press conferences, debriefings, all the bits and pieces, because it's not, you don't just rock up with a bike and go for it. There's a huge technical thing. I mean, is that what you're trying to give? A bit of history, a bit of location, and put a bit of colour, a bit of flesh on the bone?
Yeah, definitely. I'm trying to sort of outline a little bit what's going on in the sport. I mean, Ducati are the sort of predominant, you know, manufacturer for the last half a decade. You know, how did they get to that position? Some of the personalities, what ultimately makes a person want to risk their life going at 220 miles an hour. Some of the safety stuff, how airbags have become mandatory and how they've had an influence. I mean, they're also, yeah, just trying to take the reader into what a Grand Prix is like, because I think the majority of books we've seen about sort of motorcycle racing in particular is based more on, say, riders and biographies and autobiographies, or the technical side explaining what the bikes are, or historical. So this was something like a little bit different, and it was influenced by books like All Played Out by Pete Davis, who was, you know, accompanying like the England football team at the 1990 World Cup, and also Richard Williams, like a renowned F1 journalist.
Yeah, I've interviewed him a few times. Yeah, I've interviewed him. Races is brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, I love that book, and I love the way that he kind of really just sort of submerged the reader into what it was like in F1 at the time of Schumacher and Hill and you know, Jacques Villeneuve. You know, I love that kind of sort of insider scope. And I think in the media landscape these days, where people consume everything through sort of podcasts, videos, you know, less and less on long form articles, and the real kind of depth you can achieve through writing, you know, the book does seem like a natural thing to do at the time. So I hope, you know, people who sort of want to get more into the sport or find out this is a little bit more about the fabric of it will enjoy the pages. What? Do you ride yourself, Giles?
No, I follow it. I have the worst luck with motor transport in the universe. People will know this. And my father was a professional racing driver, and we have this theory that basically he did a deal that he would never have a serious accident on the track as long as his son got all the bad luck motor-wise. So if I even look at a car that's, you know, it falls apart. So motorcycles, at an early age, I decided after doing schoolboy scrambling and falling off in a big way on a wet bit of road, I thought, right, that's me done with that one. Because once you crack your hip at 17, you remember. And I've yet to fall off a car. However, I do follow it. And we, you know, I do follow it very, very much so. And if you're living in Spain, it is all, you know, it's always going to be there or thereabouts. Yeah. And Jerez, the week before Jerez down here on the Costa del Sol is quite something. Why? Because long form, I'll just ask you this one quickly. Why do you think young men race? Why is there a thread about why they want to go out there? And you mentioned the super sports fatalities, and it wasn't that very long ago that we lost a rider in the first class as well, the Italian rider. So why do you think young men, and women indeed, do you think they want to race? What is it, do you think, the buzz?
Yeah, I mean, good point about the women, because I mean, I think this is the second year of the WCR Women's World Championship, which runs concurrently in the World Superbike Series. I don't know. I just think it's, I mean, pick a cliche. Is it just sort of the form of adrenaline and the fact that motorcycle racing now is maybe a little bit more difficult to do, a little bit more exclusive? I mean, these guys race these 2 million euro prototype machines for 22 weekends. They have a handful of tests to get the thing set up, but that's pretty much it. So they're spending the rest of their time riding off-road or like on dirt track or supermoto. And those facilities also are shrinking, well, especially in Europe, you know, when you come to noise limits and room and everything else. So I think it's just a rarefied, specialized skill these days. And I guess, you know, like we were saying earlier in the show, it's still very much part of the culture, especially in Southern Europe, in Spain, Italy, Portugal. You know, there's also thriving motorcycle scenes like in France. I mean, the French GP in Le Mans is sold out, you know, each year with 200,000 to 300,000 people. The attendances are incredible. Sachsenring as well for the German Grand Prix is always extremely busy. I mean, there are key events on the calendar. And then in Asia, it's a whole different thing, of course, where a motorcycle really, really is part of a daily transportation routine.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's I think organizers are trying to tap into still this fascination with motorcycling through cup series, through formula series, trying to make it as cheap as possible for young people to do. I wouldn't go as far as to say that it's a thriving scene, but then I still think that it's one with a lot of passion and a big, big community.
Yeah, I mean, I had a young guy in here on my show a couple of weeks ago called Josh Wood, and he's trying to get, you know, he's 16 years old, he's racing in junior series. It's still, I mean, it's still sort of 60,000, you know, to do a full series. I mean, it's eye-watering, but the enthusiasm's there, and you know, you see these, and he's training, and he's doing, you know, he's only 60, he's eating right, you know, he's not doing the Mick Haywood, you know, having a quick fag and then, or Barry Sheen, a fag and a beer on the bike with a you know, Miss World behind him. I mean, this guy is nutrition, training, the whole thing. He's got that 1,000-yard stare, which is quite frightening in one so young. So that, you know, it's still got attraction. And I suppose the other thing is the fact that, Adam, if people haven't been to a MotoGP, it must be great when you take them along and sit them at the first corner or something and say, right, just stay there and watch this.
Yeah, 100%. Like I say, it's the whole kind of sensory impact, you know, the noise, the speed, you know, what you're actually seeing these guys doing on the bike. It's, you know, I people that have seen it for the first time, it really makes an impact. And it's always refreshing to see that, even after like 20 years. You know, sometimes I've heard plenty of marketing people and teams people saying, we just need to get people through the gate, because when they see what, you know, is on offer, then they'll come back again. And, you know, I'm sitting outside Motorland now, and, you know, there are already fans here outside the gate on a Thursday waiting for riders to roll in. And I think it's impressive. It sort of, once it grabs you, like most motorcycling in general, I think it just stays with you.
So I suppose the end of the book, which I'm holding, here you go, in my hot little hands, people listeners can hear it, is the fact that this is, you know, you can watch your MotoGP, but also you can find out more of what's going on, because you've detailed the sort of the behind the scenes look.
Yeah, I mean, you can see it on, you know, through the TV, you can watch it through an app, you can see some of the highlights through Instagram or whatever. But if you want to find out more, or you want to get deeper, or, you know, you want to sort of learn a bit more about Pekka Bagnaia, the guy who's won the world championship in, you know, sort of the last couple of years, 22, 23, then, you know, there's this long form content where you can really sort of take a dip in and learn some more.
The book is called Motorcycle Grand Prix, Insider Stories from World Championship Racing. It's by Adam Wheeler, who we're speaking to somewhere in a car park outside Aragon. If people want to find out more information about you, and follow you on the socials, where's the best place to find you and say nice things to you?
Well, I'm still doing stuff on Twitter or X, you know, not so much, but at On Track Off Road, which was like an online magazine I had for sort of 10 years. Again, an example of how kind of the media landscape changes. But yeah, they also have a blog on Substack, the Substack platform, On Track Off Road. So have a look there. I'm writing numerous stories from every Grand Prix weekend. And then, of course, you know, with some colleagues, we do the Paddock Pass podcast, which is on every sort of audio channel. So if you want a daily update from what's going on at MotoGP, including interviews and other content, then just search for a Paddock Pass podcast.
And of course, you can download the book. We can order the book via our own virtual bookstore. There's a nice picture of the front cover on the website. When the race finishes and everybody else is relaxing a bit and having champagne, presumably you've got to sort of scrabble off and file sort of 300 or 500 words quick, haven't you? That must be quite a sport in itself, Adam.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes you see everybody sort of vanishing home, you know, sort of an hour or two after the race, and you're kind of thinking, oh, that would be nice, you know, just to sort of show up and blat out a bit of work and then go home as well. But usually it's sort of 9, 10 p.m. by the time you're leaving the media center and you've got all your copy done and you know, your podcast recorded and everything else. But no, it's a great lifestyle. I don't want to grumble.
I was going to say, talking about, you know, I'll swap you if you want, Madam, for a good record.
Yeah, no violins, please. No violins.
And of course, the book is called Motorcycle Grand Prix, Inside Stories from the World, from World Championship Racing. It's by Adam Wheeler. Adam, I know you've got a busy weekend, so just thank you so much for your time today.
No, to you. Thank you. Thanks for talking about the book.
Stuck in a dinner routine rut? Picking tonight's meal doesn't have to be stressful. Here's an idea. Let Cook Unity handle dinner tonight with premium meals delivered to your door. New menu drops, weekly recommendations, and a growing community of award-winning chefs. Cook Unity offers over 400 meals for every palate. Shake up your meal routine. Go to cookunity.com/rut or enter code RUT before checkout for free premium meals for life.
Fall calls for comfort. Mack Weldon's got essentials designed for cool days and timeless style. Their new Ace line combines comfort with sophisticated looks. Go to mackweldon.com for 20% off your first order of $125 or more with code MACK25.